And they're going to come up to the microphone and share for about 5 minutes. Now, you got a panel full of speakers, and it's my job to try to help keep them to 5 to 6 minutes. I know, good luck with that, right? Okay, so, ladies, here is your question. What does emotional sobriety look like to you today? And we'll start with Miss Polly.
My name is Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had to drink since April the 11th of 1977. For that, I am eternally grateful. I have a home group. That's the West Connect group in Jacksonville, Florida. I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor. And those are the things that I need to have to be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. What does emotional sobriety look like to me today? Well, I'll tell you right now, emotional sobriety looks to me like girls talk. I have never been so excited. And I don't know about you, but I've just been saying, the fire's in my belly. The fire's in my belly. This has been so fantastic that we get to share here and we get to come here. And I just will, you just cannot imagine how many people have been a part of this weekend. And I want anybody who has done anything, big, little, whatever, with Girls Talk this weekend, I want you to stand up. I can't believe that I've had the opportunity. And the other thing is that I'd like Lee to come up here. Lee Yeldale, shut up and come up here. About 4 years ago, Lee called me on the phone and he said, how'd you like to do a conference? And I didn't know what to say. He said, girl stock. He says, just think about it, girl stock. And I just want you to thank Lee for thinking about it and Lee for having us do that. Thank you.
My name is Lee. I'm an alcoholic. In November of 1984, the grace of God fell into my life, and I got a brand new life. And where I came from, there was nobody getting brand new lives. And I got one. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with untreated alcoholism, had a spiritual awakening, and lived the life of a pig with women. Peggy's nodding her head. And thank you for the opportunity to be a different kind of man today with you ladies. Thank you so much.
Now the rest of our panel is going to have something, you know, more. But I just wanted to tell you that there is not words to express the privilege of being able to work on Girls Talk. And I thank everybody who's helped me, everybody who's done anything, the speakers. We wouldn't have any of this without the speakers. And I just want to thank you. So, and I want to give a special thanks to Hillary, who sent our entertainment. And a special thanks to Amanda, who's been our voice. You can register. We're going to be open in the morning to register. We got quite a few registrations already for 2016. And I hope that you come and just bring everybody from your state, bring your sponsees. And I want to just say, I met a gal in Naples, Florida, last year. And she's here at Girl Stock today with 11 sponsees. That's just a little bit. They're all from Chicago. So come on. Save your money. Get your hotel, get your airfare, and come on down, y'all. Thanks.
My name is Mari, and I am an alcoholic. And my dry date is the 10th of August, 1984. Oh, somebody said to me today, I asked them what the dry date was. They said, what does that mean? I guess I'm getting old. I think today you say your sobriety date. But when I got sober, they said dry date. It's the 10th of August, 1984. And I'm just so overwhelmed to be here. I was here at the first one and not the third one. You know what Polly and Lee and everyone who's got anything to do with it put into this, for you who attend, for your great enthusiasm that you have and your great love of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for the wonderful speakers we've had so far. And I'm just overwhelmed. And you know, emotional sobriety, you know, unhealthy dependence was always at the bottom of my emotional disturbances. It was always a dependence. You know, I was one of those women that what I wanted a man that would support me absolutely and totally, buy me anything I wanted, and leave me alone to do exactly what I wanted to do. And I remember I spent a lot of time in mental institutions because of my drinking. Oh, you think that's funny? What a sick thing. And I remember once the psychiatrist said to me, you know, I'm going to send you for assertiveness training. And I said to him, I don't need assertiveness training. I'm here because I tried to kill my husband. He said, that's not assertive, that's aggressive. He said, alcoholics are aggressively dependent. And I had to think about that. What does that mean, aggressive dependent? And I came to see through constant examination exactly what that meant. And it was just what I've just described to you. I was dependent on the world for approval. Otherwise, I felt like nothing. And if you didn't give me the approval, I'd punch you. When I was drinking, you know. It's, what this program does for us is wonderful. You know, today I am not dependent. The only person I want to approve, well, one of them is my sponsor, of course. I like it when he says, good job. You know, I'm really happy about that. And I want God's approval. You know, now, on Sunday, my little granddaughter, Gia, who's 9, is making her first Holy Communion. And my eldest son's child, and he called me before I left. And, you know, my son, he was taken away from me, my eldest boy, from when he was 11, and he came back when he was 24 to live with me and then got married. But he said, Mom, he said, guess what? When Gia makes her first Holy Communion on Sunday, I have someone coming especially to sing Amazing Grace. I said, why did you pick Amazing Grace, son? Because it's not really a Catholic hymn, you know, I love it, it's my favorite song, but I think it's Baptist, I don't know. So I said to my boy Richard, he's 47, he's still my boy. I said, so son, why did you pick Amazing Grace? He said, Mom, when I think of where you went and what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for you, and if you hadn't come and taken us back to live in Canada, even when I was in my 20s, I wouldn't have met the wife I had today. I wouldn't have these children today. My granddaughter wouldn't be making, my daughter wouldn't be making her first Holy Communion. He said, it is the amazing grace that you have got through Alcoholics Anonymous that has filtered down to me and now my child. So I'm grateful, because what we get here is we become recreated and we pass that on down to our children. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Lynn and I'm an alcoholic. Well, after the stories I told you last night, I'm not going to pretend that I have it, you know. Not only do I take dives, but I swallow water and I get sand in my bikini. Well, now it's a one piece, but... Oh, you know, I come from a place of tremendous insecurity and no self-worth, no self-esteem, no self-respect, and no tools for living. And although I still have my moments, the fact that most of the time I am at peace and I am in the moment, I feel loving, I enjoy your presence, I found you very beautiful, and I am so happy that you're gorgeous and smart and doing well in your lives. I'm not threatened, I'm not comparing, I'm just so happy and honored to be amongst you this weekend. Right now, for me, what it means to be emotionally mature is to learn to be a good wife. And I have a short fuse, and my French-Canadian finger can come up. And the first time that I did that with my honey, I was wearing his pajama. I was in his apartment, and the sleeves were hanging down, and the zippers were scratching on the floor. And I went at him like this, and he recoiled. Now, this is not a fearful man. He recoiled and he looked at me, and I saw in his eyes he was really disturbed. And he said, do you realize how illogical you are right now? And the next day he explained to me, Lynn, this hurts my self-respect. You're not respecting me. This is where it's bothering me. And so it sent me into a new path of growth where this is no longer acceptable. And I did it, I think, one or two more times. And I have not raised my voice in months, right? And so... So this is my victory in emotional sobriety in my life today. And thank you so much for showing me the way, because you are my heroes. Thank you.
Don't look at me. I know you're going to tie me. She makes me nervous. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Misun. And my sobriety date is January 27th, 1995. And emotional sobriety. Wow. That is, but I do know that I am at my best when I'm with you and when I'm in the middle of this thing with you. You know, when I hear the laughter, and I think Hillary said it, I don't remember if it was in Orlando or the laughter is like music, you know, and she's just so beautiful singing. And when I hear the laughter, you know, when I see the hugs, when I see that stuff, you know, when I see the tears, when I see all that, you know, and if I am awake to see it. And if I'm not in the middle of it, I'll miss the whole thing. And I think Bill talks about that, you know, he'll be in, you know, waves of self-pity and depression, and then he'll go, you know, help somebody in the town's hospital, and he'll be, like, lifted. You know, that sort of thing. And when I see those things that people experience and walking with this journey shoulder to shoulder together, and I see some amazing things, and it's more than what is happening to me. And I just want to share this story, and I don't want to embarrass her, but Shane was only a few months sober, and I get a phone call from her, and she was so distraught. And this guy that we know in Jacksonville, his name is Ed, and he's been in and out, in and out, in and out. And, you know, he became one of those peripheral ones we ignore. You know, it's like we don't really want him in the meetings. We don't want him in the halfway house with detoxes. And people got sick of him at the halfway house and the detoxes, and he's not allowed to go anywhere. Now he's completely homeless, and he's been around for years. A nice man. Anyway, he was living on the street, you know, and it's a halfway house. Sometimes they'll give him food if they run into him, and they even stopped doing that altogether. And she runs into him, and he was so sick. I mean, she could just tell he hadn't taken a bath. He was living out in the woods. He had open sores everywhere. I mean, just infections, and just he was just in a terrible condition. And she sees him, and she said, "I'm going to take you to the hospital, whether you want to go or not." And she can't be more than 2-3 months over, Shane. She takes him to the hospital, and the next morning he died. And she was so distraught. And I told her, I said, "You're missing the whole thing. What you have shown is that you you let him know, and he knew, he died knowing that somebody still cared. And that he died." And that he died knowing that he was loved and he was still child of God. And these are the things that I get to watch only because I was awake and I was able to see it. And you guys gave me an opportunity to do so. And I have my good friend in Jacksonville says this all the time. I love it. I'm just stealing things from people all the time. And she says, "I came to AA to save my ass, and I didn't know my soul was attached to it." So thank you. And I'm going to pass it on to Katie.
Hi, y'all. Katie Parker, alcoholic. You know, I misunderstood for a long, long time what emotional sobriety meant. I thought it meant physical sobriety. And, you know, it certainly, you have to have physical sobriety to get emotional sobriety. But I thought, like I said earlier, that was the finish line. And one of the things I can tell you is when I got sober, it's so nice to know that Maury and I have the same amount of time. I just kind of even feel even better, you know. Love that. You know how you ask somebody how much time they have, and you have an emotion behind it. You're like, I'm either with you or beat you. I have 8 days more than Lee. I can just go down the list. But when I came into AA, you know, the first 3 years I was all about getting sober because I loved the fellowship. fellowship, all about it. I was doing the Chrysanthemum Conference, chairing it. I mean, I was just in the middle of the herd. And then when I lost the love for that, and then I went to church, you know, went into the church world and found Jesus. I don't know if you knew he was lost, but I found him. And through all of that, and then I fell in love with, you know, Jesus, and then went that world, and then came back into AA, and, you know, did the whole codependency recovery, and I was always a seeker. What that tells me is I was a seeker. I was seeking this emotional sobriety, but unbeknownst to me, I didn't realize it was through the steps. It's actually through the triangle, right? The unity of the fellowship, the service, but the recovery was crucial. See, I was in the middle of the herd, and I was doing service, but I could jump on the hood of your car. You know what I mean? I mean, that could happen too. And so what ended up happening, now that I see what's gone on, and when looking back, we see the undeniable hand of God in it, is today I can tell you I'm in emotional sobriety because my pipe is clean. Now, doesn't mean I'm not going to misbehave. Doesn't mean I'm not going to have my feelings hurt. I'm not going to get angry. I'm not going to, you know, blow up at my husband. That kind of stuff. That's going to happen from time to time. But the spiritual transformation shocks me. That's when I know I'm growing, is when all of a sudden there's a situation and I think, God dang, I just got no dog in that fight. I'll give you one quick story. Are we taping this?
Yes.
Oh. Well, I was somewhere. And leave it a little benign. And it was a very emotional event we were at. There was a lot of AA people there. There was all different kinds of people there. And this little chick comes in, and she's got about a year sober. And she comes in, and this was not an AA event, okay? But there's a lot of AA people there. And she sits down. She shows up late, okay? And it was a pretty big deal. She sits down, and when she leans forward, she's got the stamp on the back, and her thong underwear do that whale tail thing, right? And I swear to God, I looked down, and I thought, and then I looked at my husband, he goes, and I thought, that is really ugly. But you know what? I got no dog in that fight. It's not my business to lean over and tap her on the shoulder and go, excuse me, pull that up. And you got no idea how huge that is for me. That is really a bit, that is emotional sobriety. There you go.
Okay. All right. Come on. I'm Deb. I'm a real alcoholic.
Yeah.
She switched seats. Like, I don't ever want to follow Katie. Okay? Remind me of that. I don't ever want to follow Katie. Emotional sobriety to me, you know, I think about it kind of in the different things that I do in my life. And for me, emotional sobriety today is this. At work. When my boss says, hey Deb, can I see you for a minute? I don't have that, uh-oh, I'm getting called to the principal's office. Oh my God, what did I do wrong? I don't have to go back and take the inventory of every conversation I've had for the last 3 days to figure out what I'm getting in a jam about. That doesn't happen anymore. Because I'm square with the people in my life at work. I talk to people with respect. I look them in the eye. And here's the additional kicker there. I'm not afraid to be wrong anymore. I used to be terrified to be wrong or to not know the answer. Terrified to be wrong or not know the answer because I thought that my immediate value with you would go down. And today, hey, Deb, let me see you for a minute. I walk in and go, yeah, what's up? And I don't have that thing in the pit of my stomach. And it just disappeared probably 4 or 5 years ago. I was working for the United States Marine Corps, and I was always working for general officers of, you know, with various numbers of stars on their shoulders. And when they walked in the room and said, my office, if you walked in there with that thing in the pit of your stomach, you were not going to be able to be effective or efficient for him. And they needed people who could make decisions and go execute. There wasn't a lot of time to think things through and hold a committee meeting before you made something happen. And so over time, knowing that I'm good at what I do, I don't oversell myself. I am absolutely right-sized. When somebody says, my office, I walk in there standing up straight, looking at them in the eye, and I'm there to be of service. That's an enormous transformation for me, and that is emotional sobriety at work. That's a very tangible piece of emotional sobriety for me. It really is. Because the way I was raised, when you got called to speak to somebody in authority or somebody who was older than you, you're going to get hurt. And to be able to walk into a room with somebody of authority and not be afraid that I'm going to get hurt and know that I am absolutely square because of right action, man, what freedom. What freedom. And in my personal life, emotional sobriety, I was thinking about this when the other gals were talking. Emotional sobriety for me is being willing to be a full-on partner with the man I love. A partner with the man I love. Not take more than is mine. Not give less or give more. Not keep score anymore. Doesn't mean I don't have my bad days. The girls have talked about that. Doesn't mean I don't have my bad days. But kind of across the board, I know how to be a partner today. And I'm willing to be a partner today. And I don't have to walk around my life at all because I live transparently. I don't have to worry about him finding out anything. Because everything I do is above board. That is emotional sobriety. I don't have to walk around in fear in either of those situations, at work or at home. I don't have to live in any kind of fear that I'm going to get found out. I can't tell you when that disappeared, but oh my God, what freedom. But I don't worry about being found out. Again, I don't oversell and I don't undersell. I know what my character defects are. And today, I know and embrace what my character assets are. And I know that I've been relieved. God has removed some of those character defects from me. And he's replaced them with their flip side. You know, I have an incredible ability to love today. I have an incredible ability to show up today. I have an incredible ability to produce today. So when I move around my life, if I'm living transparently, I don't have to live a fear-based life. And that thing in the pit of my stomach that says, uh-oh, I don't have it anymore. And that's emotional sobriety. It really is. And talk about freedom. Talk about freedom. That's one of the reasons why we finish our ninth step. That's one of the ninth step is the freedom step. Masoon just, man, she rocked it today. Holy Christmas, huh? But when the ninth step is done, I walk around with my head up. I look every single person in the eye, and there is nobody that I got to cross the street for. And that's emotional sobriety. So Katie just said it. You want emotional sobriety, work the program. You want emotional sobriety? Live in a constant and expanding relationship with God. And Mari covered the dependencies. You know? Make sure that my dependency is on God. You know, for me, when I gave up the insanity of alcoholism, I didn't know that I had to give up the insanity of self-reliance. Again, doesn't mean I don't have bad days. But for the most part, I don't live in a self-reliant world today. And because I have a spiritual practice. So, thank you.
My heart's not beating out of my body. My name is Karen Maloney, and I'm a blessed Al-Anon. It has been such a privilege to be with you alcoholic women this weekend. It's such an honor, such an honor. I know what emotional drunkenness is. I didn't drink.
and get drunk. But I acted like it. And I told you that I pulled a knife on my husband that time. And what I didn't tell you was when Don and I were dating, and Don said, let's take Walter to the zoo. Because if you're single and, you know, you're seeing somebody and they are nice to your little one, well, that they get points, right? And remember that just in case you need it. And so on the way, Don says to Walter, Walter, I have a little gift for you. And he pulled out a little pocket knife about this big. And I said, Walter can't have that pocket knife. He's too little. He was 7. And I said, he can't have that pocket knife. And I said, he could get hurt with it. And Don said, it's a little bitty pocket knife. And Walter looked at Don and he said, you better watch my mom. And he said, what do you mean, Walter? And he said, my mom's crazy sometimes. And he said, what do you mean? And he said, well, he said, she threw a butcher knife at my dad once. And I said, Walter, did your daddy tell you that? And he said, no. And I said, why would you say that? And he said, I saw it. That's emotional sobriety. That is not emotional sobriety. 1.5 years ago, my husband died with an illness of about 1.5 years. I couldn't talk about this today. Don died with 38 years sober. And that man was so strong. And it gave me such strength. But I had you all. And it wasn't the same you all that are sitting in this room. It was other you alls. And some of the you alls were in this room. Sure were. And he said to me, because they had to put this in a later on him for 24 hours. And he came out of it. And he said to me, promise me you will never let them do that to me again. And I said, why, precious? And he said, because it was the darkest place I have ever been. And I couldn't feel my God there. And the doctor said, it was the only person they have ever known that had been put on one of these respirators that had come back and told them what they had experienced. And he said, I couldn't find God, and it was dark, and I was scared. And he said, you can't let him put it back on me. And so the night they came in and said, you're going to have to do it. And I said, no, you're not. But that morning when I had walked into his room, he had said he was in ICU. And he said to me, I just had the greatest visit. And I said, who with? And he said, Maid Ellen, Buck, and Mikey. And that was my mother and my daddy and Mike Warren, my best friend's husband. Mike had been dead for 2.5 years. My mother and daddy had been dead for many years. And he said they came and they visited with me. And they told me that I was going to be okay. And you were going to be fine. And you were going to be okay. And there were going to be so many people around you to take care of you. And I was going to be with you too. And he said, it was the sweetest visit I've ever had. And it scared me to death because I knew he had been to the other side. I called my son. He works 20 minutes from there. He was there in 5 minutes. And we spent the day with him. And my daughter-in-law came. And we talked about sweet memories. And all the fun things, you know. And then just, you know, he said, I want this mask off of me. They had this mask that looked like a motorcycle helmet on him, you know. But it wasn't a respirator. He said, get this thing off. And the doctor said, nurses said, can't do it. I said, get it off. You just told me my husband's going to die today. And he's going to die without that thing on him. So he can talk to us and we can talk to him. He's going to the other side today. Get that off. And they took it off. I'm not sure that was emotional sobriety right then. Or maybe it was. I was taking care of my man. And he passed. He passed about 2 a.m. And right before he passed, he said, took his hands and he said, "We need to say a prayer." After the funeral was all over, and I was back in Ohio, which was like 6 months later because I went from the funeral in Texas. He died in Ohio. We went to Texas to bury him. And then I went on to Mexico because that's where we spent winters. And when I got back, there was a package waiting on me, and it was from the funeral home. And it was all the documents and, you know, those kind of things. And the visitation book. And we opened it and we were glancing through it. And Walters is the number guy. And he said, "Mom," he said, "do you know how many people were at Don's funeral and viewing?" And I said, "Honey, a couple of hundred maybe." And he said, "There's so many people names on one page, and I've counted the pages, and there were over 700 people that registered, and 99% of those people were either Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon." And she was there. Katie and Charlie were there. "You've saved my life this year and a half. I've had really low moments, and I've had some really good moments. This has been one of the sweetest of all. And so I thank you. Today I get to live with emotional sobriety most of the time. I bought a new sofa last week. I asked for it to be delivered. They delivered it. I thought I needed a love seat instead of a sofa, and I needed a chair. And I walked in and I went, 'It's too little.' And so I called the store." "You send back trees, I send back sofas." I called him and I said, "This is Karen Maloney. You have to come get this stuff. I don't like it. It doesn't fit. I wasn't there when they delivered it." And I said, "But I had to have a reason, right, that I wasn't there when they delivered it. So I made up something, you know." That's not quite emotional sobriety, but it worked. And Tuesday, then I went back to the store and they said, "You know, you have 7 days. We'll bring anything out you want. And if you don't like it, we'll give you another 7 days until you decide what you want." And I said, "That's customer service like I've never heard." But it's not. Because we even beat that. We take just 1 day at a time. And then we get 7 days. And then we get 2 weeks. And then I came in December the 1st of 1981. You know, and that's emotional sobriety today, is getting to live in today, not having to go crazy. We took my little grandson to the zoo one day while Gail was there, and I kind of got crazy that morning, and I guess I wasn't quite as nice to my daughter-in-law as I should have been, because I needed to get to the zoo before this certain lady left so Tony could visit with her and see her. You know, she runs the zoo. And we only had 15 minutes, and I was panicking because I couldn't find the zoo on my GPS. I wouldn't admit emotional sobriety at that particular moment. And Walter was listening on the phone because Karina had him on the phone. And he called me in a few minutes and he said, "Mom, what? I've never heard you talk to Karina like that." And I went, "What?" I didn't even know I was. I was just nuts because I had a mission and I wanted Tony to see the head of the zoo because he wanted to see the head of the zoo. So, you know, one day Billy J. says,
It's you today and me tomorrow, you know? So I hope, and it's my goal to live in emotional sobriety, not to have to go crazy. And I got to make amends, you know. I've had a great time at the zoo. And on Tuesday, I'm getting new furniture. And this weekend, I've been with you all. People that I love as much as anybody in the world. And, madam, you're at the top of that list. And I thank you for my life.
I'm Marilyn. I'm an alcoholic, and sobriety date February 8, 1972. Thanks to this very beautiful program. When I was new, there was a fellow in our group named Bill, and he talked about the feeling that many of us had about being a stranger in a strange land. And he said that he just had visions of a spaceship coming in, landing near him, opening up the front door, and saying, "We've come to take you home, Bill." And gosh, I thought, yes, that's it. I was waiting for the spaceship. And that was in my early years. And I just realized, as these wonderful friends were talking here in this panel, that I think Alcoholics Anonymous is our spaceship. I think that it opens the door and it says, "We've come to take you home." Oh, thank you. And I think that if we get on and go for the ride, we do get to go home. And home, as we get closer to home, represents emotional sobriety. That's what we are headed for. There's prayers, lots of prayers, but many of them take the form of "help me, give me, change me, and use me." And that order of prayers is kind of the experience of many of us, the milestones, the prayer milestones in this transformation that we undergo. And in the beginning, we just scream, "Help, help, I'm dying. Take me in." And then pretty soon we're able to say, "Give me. Give us this day our daily bread," or "grant me the serenity." And then we begin to realize we need to change. Change me. The seventh step prayer. Take away my character defects. Make me into somebody that can be of maximum use. And then finally, we say, "Use me." And the 12 and 12 reminds us of the beautiful prayer of St. Francis, to be an instrument of God's peace and bring love where there's hatred, and just try to bring comfort. What I've seen this weekend is what I experience as a very much "use me" transformation in the spirit here. I've not seen so much love and generosity ever in one room, I don't think. And I think we're pretty close to home. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, panel. Thank you so much for sharing with us your perception of what emotional sobriety looks like today. Wasn't that fabulous?